The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So today's reflection is on tracking the elephant, a woods person's tracking of the elephant. It's a simile in the middle length discourses, the Majjhima Nikaya. And it's a teaching story from the Buddha. And basically, the premise is that a tracker would enter a forest looking for a great, huge bull elephant back in ancient India. Very valuable animal. If tamed, it would be useful for all kinds of things. So trackers would regularly go in to try to find an elephant like this. And there's two kinds of trackers. There's an amateur and there is a person wise to the ways of the woods, a woods wise person. And when tracking the elephant, you might see a big footprint, right? And so an amateur thinks, aha, that's the footprint of this big, great elephant. But a skilled person thinks, you know, that could be a short elephant with really big feet, not a big elephant. And then going along, let's say these two people are on two different journeys, but similar ones, they might see scrapings high up on the tree trunks. So that would be left by the tusks of an elephant. And the amateur thinks, aha, this is a great elephant, big elephant, bull elephant. But the skilled woods person thinks, maybe. Or it might be a tall, skinny elephant, leaving its scrapings. And only when the skilled woods person follows the elephant and finally actually catches a glimpse of it or sees it, maybe in a clearing in the woods or a field, then they know, ah, that's the great elephant. And the idea here is that there is an art to tracking what we can't see, to discovering what we can't see. And there's a step-by-step process in meditative practice, a step-by-step verification, if you will. The whole thing can be a beautiful journey. There's an art to being nourished, even by the process of the exploration. However, taking onward leading signs as onward leading while nourishing should not be mistaken for the final goal of awakening, of awareness. So there is an art to being nourished by the process of moving deeper and deeper into the ecology of our mind, our heart, our practice, of the broader gradual training of this path. So, I kind of playfully restructured this sutta a little bit to reflect the gradual training itself, sila, ethical training, samadhi, broadly speaking meditation, though also stillness and steadiness, and panya, wisdom. And so maybe your first glimpse of a track on the spiritual path, your first footprint, might be hearing inspiring teachings or encountering the Dhamma in books or even chants or things like that. And it's also adopting the first level of the training, ethical conduct, sense restraint, and the basics of living a harmonious life. And this is an absolutely beautiful foundation, onward leading in of itself, and ethical behavior in particular can also be a sign of, is often a quite reliable sign of spiritual maturity in oneself and others. if it is accompanied with a certain openness of heart and mind and depth and presence. Or to put it another way, spiritual maturity necessitates ethical behavior, but ethical behavior does not mean a person is spiritually mature in of itself. But sila and sense restraint can help guide you through the forest, through the jungle, the ecology of the mind, towards the full process of awakening. And to just unpack a little bit of a resonance of this simile, the Buddha himself was often likened to a great elephant, as were any monks and nuns who had experienced levels of awakening. There's a term, naga. I'm not sure how many of you know the term naga, but it can mean various things. One is dragon. I think that's actually my favorite translation. Another is serpent, and another is elephant. And what they all have in common is that they're, from the perspective of ancient India, bald. They don't have hair. And that's part of why linguists, etymologists think the word naga became associated with fully awakened people because of the shaved head, right? The greatness of their bodies and their comportment, but also that. And the footprints of the Buddha are likened to the footprints of the elephant. So this tracking process of following the path, you can kind of think of yourself as following in the footsteps of the Buddha himself in our own small way. So the first footprint leads us deeper into the forest, the exploration of the heart and mind from a Dharma perspective. And then perhaps the second observation, those scrapings high up on the trees, that could be considered signs of meditative experience. Whether it's the depth of samadhi and stillness, or in this form of practice that is in this group more clustered around the teachings of Sayadaw Tejaniya and the third and fourth foundations of mindfulness, mindfulness of mind or heart, and the contents of the mind and heart, we can be nourished by little glimpses, little absences of the hindrances. Sensual desire, ill will, restlessness, worry, remorse, sloth, torpor, and doubt. Anytime those drop away or attenuate, that's another signpost. That's another leading onward into the forest. Even more so for the glimpses, the glimmers of absence of greed, hatred, and delusion. These are onward leading. And some of you have come to this group when I've done talks or series on samadhi. And samadhi, steadiness of mind, can suppress greed, hatred, delusion, and hindrances. However, and that's valuable in itself. It gives us an alternative to sort of the, shall we say, the playlist that's often in our minds, or the hedonic treadmill of always wanting more, more, more. It's not, of course, the final goal. These absences can happen through samadhi, and they can also happen through glimpses that presage the peace of full awakening. It can be quite ordinary and happen any old time. As the practice matures, those too are onward leading. So especially when the practice is about noticing mind states, it's really helpful not to get misdirected by mistaking meditative states, even bliss, expansive stillness, with awakening. there's an art to being nourished by these things and being nourished by glimpses of awakening without thinking you got there. So many years ago, there's an anecdote about this. A friend of mine that I've lost touch with had worked really, really hard. This person wasn't naturally a deep meditator, particularly, didn't naturally have capacity for concentration, but had it in their mind that they really wanted to get to concentration states. So they sat retreats with specialists in this, and eventually one retreat kind of dipped into the first level of a really deep samadhi. And they were happy about it. But then, of course, probably many of you know, come off retreat, come out of the state, and there you are. There's your mind. Like, maybe slightly different than it was, maybe more obviously disturbed than it was because of the stillness. And I was sad for this person because they took that as meaning the practice didn't work. Because, oh, I achieved this quote-unquote attainment. I dislike that word, but attainment. And here it is. Greed, hatred, and delusion came right back. So there's dangers to mistaking the transient states for the final goal. The dropping away of greed, hatred, and delusion. So a wise tracker on the path, or perhaps a guide on the path. There's an art, takes an art to recognizing meditative steadiness as this crucial help in recognizing clarity. But the fireworks, the fun states, the bliss, the deep calm, the peace even, remain conditioned, impermanent, subject to fading and change. However, when you get to the clearing, get a glimpse of that elephant, get a glimpse of awakening, something else gets evoked. And that is wisdom, panya, clear seeing. So while the states change, fade, go away, the direct seeing, panya, the wisdom can get sort of milked out of them, soaked out of them, and the wisdom, the maturity, can remain and continue integrating long after any particular state unweaves itself, as they do. And there are different ways of understanding panya. I'll only touch on two of them. One is called the Arya Sachani, the Four Noble Truths, but it's not just the formulation that all of you have heard about. This is suffering. This is the arising of suffering. This is the ending of suffering. This is the path to the end of suffering. That's beautiful. That's mundane right view. The Four Noble Truths, very powerful. We can go a long way by applying that lens. But noble, wise view is a different understanding where the Four Noble Truths become embodied and the self is no longer at the center of things, or at least no longer at the center of things quite so much. There's a decentering process that opens the capacity for seeing things through the lens of conditionality. When this arises, that arises. When this ceases, that ceases. And the broader interlinked conditions that bring every moment into being. And this begins to attenuate or even completely end at the deepest forms of awakening, asavakaya, the mental kalesha, afflictions of greed, hatred, and delusion. So in our simile, this is when the tracker steps into the open clearing and sees that elephant face to face sees awakened mind, glimpses of awakened heart face to face, knowing for oneself that even just for a moment, the heart and mind are freed. So to recap, there's an art to relating to the path, spiritual experiences. To truly let yourself be nourished, let the faith be built by any meditative glimpses, and to hold them lightly, recognizing insights, beneficial states, or experiences without grasping on or needing to put them on a shelf and make them the trophy of how good I am at meditation and how I attained this or that. But rather, to recognizing the ongoing process of approaching something very beautiful in your own inner clearing. The absences of what may have led to more and more suffering in the past, but now maybe leads to more and more wisdom, more and more understanding. And allowing time to be your ally rather than being in a rush. Letting the practice organically mature. Weaving in and out of ordinary life rather than demanding anything from the practice. Let it be a gift. So, thank you for your kind attention. May the benefits of our practice here together ripple through our own minds and hearts and lives to all of the lives we touch and all of the lives they touch, outwards and outwards. May all beings be safe, happy, peaceful, and free. And may our practice here together be a cause and condition for greater love, liberation, and peace in the world. No one left out. Thank you very much for your practice.
Bye, everyone. Thank you so much, Don.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Great to be with you.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you. Bye-bye.